Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Pirate of our crew.
Right now, I'm not trying to undermine you, sir, or take your captainship. I'm just slowly stabbing you in the back.
He totally is. Holy shit.
Wait, I thought
like
there was raping.
Vikings on the high seas.
Raping? And pillaging?
Yeah.
Also Vikings on the high seas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're your weekly pirates of the audio archives from your yesteryears. I'm Alon Danziger.
I'm Catherine Dunn.
And I'm Will Hasty.
We come to you every week here on Radio Free Brooklyn from 3 to 4, and we are always happy to get your submissions. If you ever want to submit anything to the show and be on Lost and Rewound, you should do so at lostandrewound@radiofreebrooklyn.org and email whatever you got. If you want to like listen to us on your phone or your computer, streaming live right now as we speak on the Radio Free Brooklyn app for Android or iPhone, download that.
Download that shit.
Go to the App Store. Go to the internet. Go wherever you got to go, but get it done.
Get it done, son.
Get it done, son. Saturday is at 3.
No, well, there you go.
Thank you.
Boom. Just like that.
That was good. This is going to be the best episode ever. Boom, boom.
Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 non-for-profit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on your donations, listeners. So come on down and support our mission. Come on down, wherever the come on down is. So support our
mission. Come on down to the boogie down.
Come on down to the boogie down.
That's the problem.
Support our mission. We invite you to make that one-time donation or monthly pledge to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. And every cent will help us continue to stay on the air. Your contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Radio Free Brooklyn is also proud to announce that we're launching an after-school program for local teenagers in 2019 to learn media literacy through media making using a hands-on approach guided by local professionals. So you can participate or donate to this program just like before. But go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/afterschool to learn more about that.
Learn how to express yourself.
Finally, how...
Before you repress yourself.
And finally, there's a newsletter also that Radio Free Brooklyn has.
What?
Radio Free Brooklyn.
Radio Free Brooklyn and loves newsletters.
It's a monthly newsletter. It won't hit your inbox more than once a month because we are dedicated to a spam-free world. Go sign up for that at Radio.
Sounds like my sex life.
Oh, dear.
Radio. That's somewhat. Oh, well, I'm sorry.
RadioFreeBrooklyn.org/newsletter. This is always a fun occasion. I always am glad that we get to be here every week and listen to old audio or just learn about our old selves. And before we begin, I just want to bring it over to you guys. If you guys have anything to plug specifically before we get going with our show.
I have Art Star Scene Radio every Saturday at 7 right here on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Oh, as opposed to just Radio the other Free. Show that you do. That
I already like, plugged, yeah.
That gets listened to more than my show every week.
Is that true?
I think so.
How do you know?
I don't know. I know these
just
things
making that
I
pronouncement.
Hear, it's a storytelling show. This is a storytelling show. But, you know, if there's going to be a storytelling show that has more people listening to it, I think the experts got more a leg up, you know?
Sometimes there's nothing you can do.
Not to be offensive, you know, a leg up with a, you know, I don't know, sorry.
It's all right. I've been doing yoga. A leg up could mean all sorts of things, you know?
Sure.
I need to see the numbers. But yeah, that's Dunson every Saturday at 3.
And then Arts Are Seen at 7 p.m. Saturdays is Catherine Day. What about you, Will? What's going on?
Every day is Catherine Day.
Honestly, this week I...
On Catherine Day.
On what is... We are actually not in Catherine Day on this lovely Thursday. We
Every
are
day is
in
Catherine
fact...
Day.
No, the only thing I have to plug is you'll be seeing The first Instagram posts of Polarity. So
oh, great.
Check that shit out.
Yeah, more update on your sci-fi series.
Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, more on that later when the info comes out. But in the meantime, let us continue on and begin with the show.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to the show. We're gonna watch a lot of show stuff.
When you did it, I thought you were going Adele with it. Like, we're going to the show.
Oh, wow. That's actually pretty good.
Right?
Yeah.
Nathan is a supervising librarian and poet currently based out of Queens. He is the author of Escape from Samsara and the upcoming collection Celebrity Sadhana, or How to Meditate with a Hammer. I want to know about how to do that. He hosts a show here on Radio Free Brooklyn every Monday from 8 to 9 a.m. called Truth to Power, in where he invites other writers, poets, and even practitioners for an in-depth intersection of political and personal beliefs. Welcome, Vijay.
Thank you so much. Thanks so
welcome,
much for having
Vijay.
Me.
Oh, I should say welcome back, actually, Vijay.
Yeah.
We did this show, and then the show did not record properly, which was such a shame.
It's such a great opportunity for, because the book, Celebrity Sadhana, or How to Meditate with a Hammer, comes to the Nietzschean idea. Friedrich Nietzsche was a philosopher who talked about the Twilight of the Idols, or How to Philosophize the Hammer. And this is like the eternal recurrence in Nietzschean philosophy, that he talked about how we live our lives over and over again, and can we be happy doing that?
Right.
Yeah.
So here we are doing another,
doing another show.
Doing the
so,
show
again.
And, just, yeah. And it's worth mentioning, so you're aiming low.
Yeah.
Well, when we aim low, we stay low. We yeah. have, and then we can only
yes,
get better
indeed.
From there.
Yeah. We aim low, we get high.
Yeah. Vijay, how long have you been based out of Queens now for?
So since 2012, I've been living in Queens, 2007, 2012.
Yeah.
So I kind of in and out, but I lived in Staten Island, grew up in Staten Island.
You grew up in Staten Island. When you moved to Queens, well, first of all, I should say, you were living in Staten Island growing up, and then where in Queens are you actually now?
Now Kew Gardens, Forest Hills area.
Kew Gardens.
That is.
Love the Kew Gardens Starbucks. Wow, that was a pointless comment.
Are you serious, Will?
I'm actually serious. I really do love it. No, at the Kew Gardens stop on the
Have
S
you
train.
Been to the library? Because that's where Vijay
that's
works.
Work, yeah.
I do not remember how I know that library. I told you this. Did I say this on ArtStar? I didn't say this here.
What?
When I was an amphetamine addict, that's where I would go to get amphetamine.
Get out of here.
I swear to God.
Yeah.
The library?
The library. Yeah.
What where aisle? We would... How do you
yeah,
know?
I think I've been aware that drug addicts come into the library for a little while. Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I really do love that Starbucks, though. It's actually quite a nice Starbucks.
Do you have a relationship with libraries going back from a young age?
Yeah, I used to go to the Great Hills Library in Staten Island.
Yeah.
And then after I left my teaching career, I decided I'd go into libraries because it seemed like a similar objective. And I think it was very good for me because it gives me a lot more upward mobility than teaching. You know,
nice.
Teaching you end up in the same position for the most part for your whole career. But this has given me a chance to move all around Queens. I worked for a little while in the Rockaways. I worked in Corona. I worked in Bayside. All different communities in Queens I've served as a... as a librarian in different capacities, yeah.
Sure. And the fact that, you know, you have that space to be able to foster your thoughts and be able to learn so much. I wonder, were your parents big readers or writers, and did they encourage their children? You're one of many
children? My sister and I.
Yes.
My sister, she's older. She ended up going to the science field. She ended up becoming an MD. She works for Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah.
But I ended up going the creative path because my parents really encouraged me. Reading, as you're saying, they told me for every classic that I read, every book in the classics section at like middle school, that I would get like comic books as a reward.
Hell yeah.
So something I was interested in. They would be like, just read a classics book and then we'll get a couple comic books for you.
So what classics do you love?
Yeah, I read Captain Monte Cristo was a big one for me.
Okay.
Three Musketeers was something I read at that age.
Any ancient Greek classics? Like
not,
Iliad,
not so
stuff
much,
like that?
But I do have copies of them. I've read through parts of it. But
okay.
Yeah, in college, I think I read a little bit of Iliad and Odyssey. Yeah, it's very interesting stuff. Yeah,
fucking comic book ever.
Yeah, yeah. And I grew up reading a lot of the what's called the Amarchitakathas, which is the Indian comic books.
All right.
And they go into the Indian philosophies and the Indian mythologies. And I grew up like reading those avidly. So it was very fun experiences reading those. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And how old were you?
In the sixth grade, fifth grade.
Wow.
Right on.
What?
That is the perfect time. Yeah. I'm not kidding. That's the perfect time to start touching all that shit. That literally is the perfect time, especially to start touching books like Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
And especially the more ancient myth stuff. Because, like, that's when you're young. I really do believe this. That's when you're young enough that, like, if you can just get past the language a little bit, it's so rich that your imagination just goes apeshit. And so
it gives you,
it's wonderful.
That's I read the Infinity Gauntlet series came out around
that
time.
I was going to say, like,
oh my God,
so,
no
I'm
shit.
So,
yeah.
So happy. So happy to see it coming on the big screen. And
What did you think? So honestly, what did you think of You Should Have Aimed for My Head?
Oh, hey, are we talking about Infinity Gauntlet?
We are.
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't.
Oh,
I'm putting.
And so
you can all talk about it, but I'm not going to be able to listen to the way I'm editing it.
I will stop talking about it. I will stop talking. That doesn't give away anything. That's just a line, and nobody knows. That's what. Hey, it was purposefully done.
This is what I get for being so behind in Phase 3. Damn it.
So I just want to let you know, at the end of The Matrix, Neo turns out to be the one, and he stops bullets.
Shut the fuck up, I haven't seen it.
We have to divert from that for a minute. I believe I've heard rumors that they're trying to remake The Matrix. Is this true?
No.
Has anybody heard
this?
I
doubt it.
No. We are in The Matrix.
Really? We're in The
Matrix. Life is a reboot of The Matrix.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Our lives are, yeah.
I will say, though, that I was talking about it recently, and I had a hard time really grasping why I should see either of the latter two Matrixes, because the
first one, I've only seen the
first one, and it was so good. I've seen it like so many times. I was like, how could there be a sequel to this movie? How could there be a third one to this movie? And evidently they made a lot of money, but
they wrote all of them together. They really did write all three together.
That's amazing.
I find that hard to believe.
No, I'm not kidding. Wow. And I got so excited because the likes of Frank Miller,
would literally said,
this is a quote, there's film of this. He literally goes, so I read The Matrix and I thought it was amazing and I never thought they could do any better. And then I read The Matrix Reloaded and I thought it was better than the first one.
Wow.
And then I read the script for The Matrix Revolutions and I thought it was better than The Matrix Reloaded. That was when they had, because remember, The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions were the first two big budget films to ever be made as one big movie and then be cut in half. Mm. And they were terrifyingly expensive.
Yeah.
And nobody ever did that because they thought it would be insane to do that. But they really did believe, Warner Brothers really did believe.
I guess that's the difference between the Matrix trilogy and the Fast and the Furious series.
Right? Yeah. You know, it takes the philosophy of the brain, the vat, you know, that we learned in philosophy school. And it really inhabits that place of like philosophical questions and inhabits it in a very fun and engaging way. So that's really, as a writer, what I try to do. I try to bring in what we could be considered like high-minded philosophical concepts and bring them into a down-to-earth, you know, really fun and engaging way.
What kind of extracurricular activities were you involved in grade school, effectively?
Yeah, in high school, I know I did fencing. So I was a foil fencer.
Nice.
And that was really great. I think that was a really great experience. In fact, sometimes I often think about going back to it.
Wait, pistol or handle grip?
Pistol always. Yeah. Yeah. Handles, the French French grip or the handle grip.
Yeah.
It's, you don't have as much control. Yeah. So I used the Italian Visconti, I believe.
I have no idea what any of this is.
It's a specific grip.
These are just,
You know, the grip has different, it just has differences. So it's just like Italian Visconti with a specific, you know, variation. Yeah,
you were involved in fencing all throughout high school.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was really fun. We our main arch enemy was Stuyvesant. So we were in, we were Tonville High School.
Oh boy!
And we met them in the finals, like my junior and senior year, I think. And we
and we poked the shit out of each other.
Storied rivalry between Sty and Tots.
Yeah,
the Sty Tots wars.
Really great to think about, yeah.
Everything else was more stationary. You were deep in books and writing. And how early were you writing, and what kind of material were you writing?
So also to talk a little bit about the clubs and such, I did a lot of like Model Congress and Model UN and all these debate clubs. And that really set the foundation for me on discussing ideas and discussing like in a kind of regimented way debate. So I remember one moment in one of the political forum or one of these discussions, the question was, it was like a question they asked you, if you could be anything, what would you be? And I remember people had coming up being like, oh, I'd like to be an animal or I'd like to be something like that. And I remember I came up and I was like, oh, you know, I was getting this whole like counter argument where I was saying, you know, oh, if you know that being a human is ultimately the ultimate goal, and that being human, that you can access all these different being points, and that we don't have to worry about, you know, conjecture, but rather we're really in a state where we can be anything. And then it kind of deflated the whole conversation because it kind of went against with the premise of the question. You know, so in a sense, everyone was like coming up being like, no, I don't like this question. And I ruined the whole question for everyone. But at the end, the advisor was like, oh, I'd like to be a star. And I thought that was really interesting. It gave me something to think about because, like, being
a star,
like a you know, actual star, a star in the celestial, like
a nebulous
supernova or something like that.
Sure.
What would it be like to be a star? And that gave me something to think about that I often think about to this day, that interplanetary bodies, you have consciousness and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
When I'm grow up, I want to be a constellation.
Yeah.
What if we are a constellation? Like, what if we actually are stars, right? And like right now, we're actually in a formation of like a constellation, but we don't know it.
Wasn't there a Moby song that was like that?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a really great thing.
Oh my God, that was actually the lyric. I fly so high, then fall so low.
What?
The song is called Stars, and it's by Moby. And it's
I was talking about We're All Made of Stars.
Oh, good. Yeah. We are all made of stars.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But getting back to you, Vision.
Wait, can I just want to say one thing on
this? Yes, Will. Yeah, getting back to you instead, Will.
Oh, God. Yep. I'm sorry.
Back to you, Will. No, kidding.
No. But honestly, the concept of do large bodies like stars, like, you know, massive gas giants, they have massive magnetospheres. They give out shit tons of energy. And we're talking about incredible amounts of mass all rammed together. So that, I find that insanely interesting, right? Because within those different fields, there is so much. And so the possibility for a bunch of ordered structure that could, you know, somehow come into something or, you know, come into consciousness would be pretty fucking cool. But again, that's fun to think about because we have so little data on what is actually in there. You know,
And also I follow the path of Buddhism, and Buddhism, they talk about after death that the consciousness can go into the God's realms and all these different realms that beings can exist in that you can impute an eye on. And I often think that celestial bodies can have an eye imputed on them, an ego imputed on them, and that's kind of what the God's realm really is. They're in this state of absorption and mental absorption that they're like in the higher state of consciousness. Also kind of detached from human realm. Yeah.
You've been practicing Buddhism for how long now?
About 10 years formally. You know, I've been looking into Western traditions of Buddhism. I visited a wad or a temple in Thailand. And then also in northern India, they have Tibetan monasteries that I stayed a little bit for about a month looking at the different monasteries.
Are you Batman?
Northern India. Yeah. It's like the I wish it was that intense.
I burned down the League of Shadows, but you know.
Well, I'm curious as to the impetus to why. You were a Buddhist before you went out to discover yourself or to explore and to become more, you know, at peace with yourself.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the impetus or definitely the driving force that I wanted to kind of reconcile, because I had gone through some difficult times in college. You know, I went through some depression. I went through some mania, you know, some feelings of grandiosity and such and all these kinds of things, some paranoia and things like that.
Sure.
And then I was like, oh, you know, as it started to settle into my career, I was like, I wanted to find a way to really have control of my mind and be more integrated with my environment, but also being a part of it, being understanding that we're a part of our environment.
Has that helped with your mania and depression?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Were you diagnosed as like bipolar?
Bipolar, yeah, yeah.
And wait, one or two?
I don't know. I think two, but actually the diagnosis has been changed since then. But
because okay. you yeah. cured it?
No, no. I mean, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
I would just say
you've put it. You've kept it at bay.
I've kept it at bay, and now if there's any problems, it's just a mild adjustment in the medication and such. But basically, I feel very much more attuned, and the therapy has a lot to do with that.
We all need therapy.
Yeah,
we do.
So you are on medicine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was hoping that it like just. Fixed it without medicine.
No, no.
Like, what is this? Sign me up. I'll yeah. take it.
I mean, nothing helps. I think the biological aspects of it, you know, require some medication. But at the same time, it's not just medication. You can't just have medication. For some people,
kind of just
everyone has different stories and different experiences. But yeah, but both combination of the path and biological responses.
How do you feel about the statement that medication will never actually cure whatever the problem is? It will make it easier, but especially when it comes to mental issues, we're only talking about making it a little easier.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the idea in Buddhism, we also talk about pacifying versus purifying.
Mm-hmm.
We may be able to pacify or kind of give something that soothes these outward expressions of problems or pathologies,
mm-hmm.
but that in order to truly purify it, we have to go through the process of meditative path, you know, mm-hmm. really going through self-inquiry and the inquiry into our environment. And then that's going to reach a point where naturally our tendencies go towards the more virtuous. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You went to Vassar College.
Vassar College. Yeah, yeah. For a couple of years, then I transferred to Rutgers University.
I see.
Because of this problem that occurred
Got you.
In 97.
Vassar College in the late 90s.
Yeah, like 96, I graduated from high school.
Yes.
I went to Vassar for about till like 98. And then I transferred to Rutgers and then finished my degree there. Yeah.
What was it like being on such a progressive campus in the late 90s?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I have an article, editorial I wrote.
Yes.
For that.
That's what I'm getting to.
Good, good. So I have an editorial I wrote.
You see the lead in?
Yeah.
I am leading. leading man.
And it's kind of interesting. This editorial is in response to other editorials that were written, or letters to the editor.
Yeah.
And it has to do with diversity, you know, and the need for self-inquiry. So should I read it or?
Just read parts of it. I mean, I think we can get the gist with probably the bullet points that you were going for.
Oh, good, good.
But what's in reference to again?
So it's in reference to another article that a student wrote.
And what was that article about?
That article was about, I referenced the key points in my thing. So during my weekend stay at Vassar as a prospective student of color, I was struck by the numerous organizations and groups that cater to the needs of various ethnic groups and gay bi communities. Unfortunately, I both do and do not understand the purpose of such groups. And ask me why I find these groups so enigmatic, I will be forced to wholeheartedly agree with the previous editorial, who says that the absence of colored faces on these campuses, and whenever they do appear, they're held together like covered wagons around the fire of their race, protecting each other from the white wilderness that surrounds them. While in theory, these groups, and this is back to me, that was a quote, but while these theories and groups are meant to be open to all students, regardless of their ethnicity, gender, or sexual orientation, in practice, they tend to alienate those who are not members of their subgroup. And I want to add that the phenomena of augmented the insecurity and hostility and fear of other people, this phenomenon augments the fear of other people, and that includes those who are different from you, hold beliefs different from you, or claim a worldview that directly opposes your own. This is the way that human beings tend to relate to each other. And the reaction is that we're creating is that creating these groups begin to call more and more specifically targeted sections of the student body. And this is something in society in general, that we have more and more specialized identities that becomes exclusionary, becomes perceived as threatening. That they talk a little bit about how the identity of a white hat had come up, like a person who wears a white cap. And this kind of identity as being someone who's a conformist, someone who's conservative. And this is something I'd come up in the previous articles. And that I created a situation in which setting a clear definition of someone who's conservative versus someone who is homosexual in a class in feminist theory. And that the idea is that this person would be able to open his mind to the possibilities of questioning themselves, of entertaining, if not platforming, the empowerment of women's society. But that this is something that doesn't tend to happen, that they tend to be very reactionary, and they tend to react in a strong way, that this never-ending cycle of questioning only to conform must be ended. The purpose of education is to break free of the cycle in such a way that the questioning process is completed only through change, true change, understanding of others and those around you as a deeper knowledge of yourself, rather than a retreat and a reassertion of who you are. So that was the basic gist of the whole editorial, yeah. That's the values I stand behind.
That was in 98.
98, yeah.
What is a white cap?
So it's someone had said that to illustrate that, like, a person who wears a white cap as, like, a caricature of someone who's very conservative, or it's like a sports cap.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's
it's like the basic bitch of baseball caps.
I was going to say that we have other caps that we associate with this mentality now, likely.
Right.
A red hat.
Maybe.
Red
hat.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Red hat, yeah.
So they were white hats then, they're red hats now. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You got it.
You might not have mania. You might actually be a god. You kind of prophesy something.
Yeah.
Yeah. The alienating subgroups thing. Like, it's interesting that you talked about that, because that's something that we were talking about on Art Star Scene Radio every Saturday at 7.
Oh my God. BJ, I had a very similar experience at Wesleyan, where you have this sort of, like, especially coming from a school and a campus that is primarily, like, overprivileged white kids. Mm. It's definitely, you know, there is a ton of social activism for minorities and for groups and for lives and for the awareness of experiences that a lot of the people who were arguing them were just discovering in themselves. And so it was sort of, I mean, I don't want to say ironic, but it was sort of, it was a little hilarious to see people who are coming from an extraordinarily comfortable place, an extraordinarily unmitigated place in their lives, right? They're coming from very comfortable homes, from very comfortable families. They're not getting shit on for the type of experiences that, that minorities do. And yet they were almost militantly screaming.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's just kind of normal, right? That kids that you're discovering yourself, you're discovering you have a voice. It's important for your thoughts to be heard, and you're still discovering a form in which to voice those opinions. So yeah, I think there's probably going to be a lot of just like, I feel this way and how do I say it? You know what I mean? Like, I get that.
Yeah. But at the same time, I had experience where I was working at the Flushing Library, mm-hmm. and a gentleman came up to me, a white guy came up to me. And he was like, it was in the international languages section. So all this floor of the library was devoted to books in other languages. So he asked me, why are all these books in Chinese?
Oh, God.
And I'm like, sir, there's many different languages here, from French to Italian to Russian. And he's like, you know, years ago, everyone used to speak English. And I'm like, actually, you know, immigrants have been coming here for many, many years, speaking different languages, the foundation of this country. I'm trying to have a civil conversation here. And he's like, you don't know. You don't know your history. And he walks off. I'm this kind of reactionary.
Wait, please tell me, like, marched off. Please tell me he was like, you don't know. Yeah, there you go.
Was he wearing a red or white
hat? I wish it was that clean. Yeah.
Jack boots. Yes. No. No. That's too far. Too far.
Yeah.
Obviously clueless. And why the hell do you walk into the international language section?
Why do you live in Queens, the most diverse possible geography?
I can answer that.
Yeah.
I came here to be racist. I'm gonna make a point. I hate all of the Chinese living in Hunts Point. I don't know. I went point.
Where's that from?
Well,
I just
made
it up.
Well
done.
Excellent.
I love it.
Bravo.
Yeah,
thanks.
He just came there to be racist, guys. Like, yeah. There to be racist.
Yeah.
I mean, like, maybe. I mean,
he had an agenda.
I'm just thinking, what if he's sort of like walking around being like, I don't understand my world anymore. And then you're like, I'm going to go to the library. At least there I'll be safe. And then he walks into the international language section. It's like he absolutely had to have an agenda. Why the fuck would he be such a douche?
That man doesn't read.
No.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why is he picking a fight for no reason?
Yeah. Going into a library. Yeah. And you don't even know how to read, but that's what you're there for. You're there to help foster a community and to be able to bring people together through the power of word and being able to, educate and enlighten. You've always felt comfortable being in that position.
Yeah, I think definitely my role is to be, when they have this meme that librarians are the generals in the war in ignorance, which I think is very good, is to be able to, you know, do my part to help educate people, help empower people, empower our communities to find pathways towards their education. Yeah.
It is the silver bullet.
Yeah. I think definitely it's like I do a monthly open mic at the library where people come in and read and we listen to featured readers read from their work, and as well as and my work in the Truth to Power show and
Can I
writing
crash that?
And such. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Open mic. Yeah,
you can't really crash an open mic.
I want to feel like I'm crashing. Yeah,
yes,
I can.
You can. Yeah.
When
you
was
can.
Your you first open can. Mic? What?
Yes, you can. You absolutely can.
Yes, yes, yes. When was your first open mic?
So this series started when I started January 2017. I started at Four Cells, but I did. I remember one specific thing that suddenly cursed me was when I was in this cruise and going to Bermuda, and it was like this club. Type thing, a like dance area in the, mm-hmm. in the cruise, in the cruise ship. Mm-hmm. And I asked them to play a Prince song from Batman. You know, it was like around the time that... it was around the time that 1989 Batman had come out.
Oh, God!
So, yeah, wasn't it the Do the Bat Dance?
No. I think it was called... I forgot the name of the song.
It was the song in the scene when the Joker, played by Jack Nicholson, is throwing paint all over this.
Yeah,
what,
exactly.
What is supposed to be a really
that song.
Nice.
That song, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called, but anyway, I told him to play that. And then I'm doing the hammer dance on the floor, you know, the MC Hammer dance, you know, and I clear the whole floor was packed. Everyone just left. I'm sitting there alone on the dance stage doing this hammer dance. And I'm just feeling like, oh, this is a really great feeling. You know, I didn't feel bad about it. You know,
I felt
really like great about it. Everyone's just looking at me doing the hammer dance.
Wait, was that cathartic? Was that the first
that
time
was
you
sort
of,
cathartic,
were,
yeah.
Were you having that moment where you're like, oh my God, I'm really having fun.
Yeah.
And they're paying attention. They're not hating me.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
It was mixed with kind of like, why did they leave? But also, I was like, why is that clear on the floor?
Why are
they? But also, like,
to
I'm
watch
dancing.
The magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, go. So, but that wasn't your first open mic, but
that
felt like
that felt like it.
That
yeah,
felt like
that
it.
Was the experience of what I think the open mic is
How
about.
How old were you?
That was like in the sixth grade again. Yeah,
That's
sixth,
amazing.
Sixth grade or something.
I love
like
it.
Like
it all
or
comes
so.
Back
yeah.
to 12, sixth
yeah.
grade.
A 12-year-old yeah. VJ doing the hammer dance on a yeah. cruise in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm all about that. So we take a quick break. When we come back, we want to get down to the nitty-gritty with what you have for us this
yeah.
week. Not to say that the editorial wasn't. That editorial did count. It was a part of your past, but there's even more in this second half of Lost and Rewound. We'll be back in a little bit.
On Radio Free Brooklyn.
To confirm, you were right. In fact, the Batman song, the Prince song in the original Batman movie in 1989 was, in fact, Bat Dance.
I mean, I don't know much, but I know some things.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Thanks for keeping us on your phone or on your computer.
Purple rain.
Into your eardrums. We got
just oozing.
We got a Podomatic page if you want to listen to any of our past episodes, and you can do so by going to lostandrewound.podomatic.com. We're also on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/lostandrewound. I don't have links for iTunes or Spotify, but I'm pretty sure if you're already on those sites, you could find Lost and Rewound very easily. What?
I listen to Lost and Rewound on two things, the Lost and Rewound app and iTunes.
Hell yeah.
It updates whenever you pop up a new show.
Boom. Done. Well, we try to update once a week. We're pretty much back up to date here.
Yep.
So at any rate, we are now joined in the studio. Catherine and Will and myself have our RFB family homie. Member, VJR Nathan, joining us.
Thank you.
And yeah, dude. So one thing that we did do last time that I remember, but I can't really say that I was doing the right thing here, was for you having a poem. I was like, I'm going to bring a poem too. But I realized it's not necessary. Because you're the star of the show for this occasion. Yeah. But you do bring a huge effing manuscript with you, man.
Yeah.
Wow,
and
yeah.
we have to discuss this manuscript before we go any further, because this shit is how many years and how many poems are in this? Or not even poems, necessarily.
Yeah. So
they're
what
all
happened
poems.
Was, no, they're not all poems. I counted, actually, about one-fourth of this manuscript, of this collection of writings, is actually poetry that I used for Escape from Samsara. And then 1/4 of it is short stories, mm-hmm. Some short stories and prose that I wrote. And then a good half of it is play scripts.
So, oh, nice.
I actually am revisiting one of the play scripts, Wide Awake, to try to see if I can make sense of it. I know what the thought was. I was thinking about, kind of as I was saying about the Bardo and about afterlives and the idea of, and this kind of brings into Suspiria. Suspiria just came out. I don't know if you know. It's this horror movie that was a remake of a 1977 film about a dance troupe, and the supernatural or the horror aspects of it are brought in. I don't want to give too much away because it's really a surprise, but that was kind of what I was going for with Wide Awake. And I think that seeing that movie kind of recoalesced my ideas, and I'm going to try to rewrite it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, just for
our
listeners.
Is it a musical? Musical
it's a regular
horror?
No, it's a drama, but it's about a dance troupe. So it's about a dance company, and the woman auditions for a dance troupe, and then she gets pulled into this coven of witches, basically.
Yeah.
So she gets pulled into this. They're all witches. So
just for our listeners at home, this manuscript is literally as thick as a good, like, you know,
yeah,
maybe 1.5, 2 classic movie scripts. So yeah, like 120 pages. Times two.
and it's about 200 pages.
Yikes.
So, yeah.
And in this manuscript, you have poems that are going back to as early as, what, like high school?
High school, yeah. I would say 95.
Okay, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Set the stage for us. What is the poem you're going to read, and how do you feel about it before you read it?
Yeah, this one, I decided to pick this poem. It was in 1996 when I had a little bit of a kind of... I was like... really in the romantic phase of my life. They're really into the romance.
Well,
thing.
Now.
I'm sorry. We're in past tense?
No. I mean, no. I was in the kind of love poetry.
Oh, right.
Really explicit, like, love poetry stuff.
High school love poetry.
You still strike me as a romantic. You're not,
yeah, I think I'm still a romantic, yeah, but I don't necessarily write this kind of material anymore.
Sure.
So I try to get a little less melodramatic, I think. It's like the melodrama, the soap opera aspects of it.
I mean, it's nothing but lovingly,
yeah,
but...
Yeah.
Schmaltzy.
Yeah. Schmaltzy, loving... I loved you from afar.
Yeah.
You're right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed. Yeah.
My right hand knew your thoughts. Oh, that sounds too weird. Wow.
Yeah.
trying to make a jerk-off joke and totally failed. Oh, well done, guys.
That's a little too. But so this one's called An Ode to Waves. Okay?
Okay.
An Ode to Waves. In a flash, he awoke. His being had disappeared in the landscape of her eyes, and there they stood alone, each a part of the other. For the vast expanse of the desert before her and before him. No one had seen them leave. No one care. Red waves engulfing his existence. You know the story. They were both gone from here, there, everywhere, nowhere. They were both gone from here, faster than they appeared. Faster than they appeared. Midnight angels, a flight once again.
Gorgeous, dude.
Thank you. Yeah.
Especially considering, I would say, the nature of you having a love poem that you write when you're in a place of more like unrequited romantic, you know, thoughts. I think
that
definitely falls in line with it. That poem was written about one person in particular, maybe?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think
so? I'm not get too much into it, but I guess like basically... You know, I had an object of affection at that time, but it didn't work out.
Had an object of affection.
Yeah, very, very heart-wrenching kind of experience.
But, we don't read enough, like, really embarrassing love poetry on Lost and Rewound. So, I mean, I think it's definitely a show that could be good for that. And... Thank you for reading that.
Thank you.
BJ, that resonates with me a lot.
Yeah.
Just because that's so classic, especially the imagery of just the watching, just moving them as they go. What was it? As they go.
See them leave and no one cared and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
And them going back and forth and back and forth.
You know,
just sort of that watching of the progression of two people. And that sense of longing of wanting to be that person in the progression.
Exactly. I remember my friend right at that juncture, a really good friend of mine told me, oh, you know, it'd be a cool story if a regular guy just grew wings, right? And then he's like, you know, you should write that. And then I wrote this whole story about this normal guy who suddenly grew wings after actually having sex. They kind of they scratched his back, and then he grew wings out of that.
Hmm.
And then suddenly he was like, "You stole my idea," and it ended up being a big fight between us. And I don't know, but then we smoothed it over. But it was just strange how
he told like, you to write it.
He told me to write it. That was my my story.
Did he get high?
No, he just felt like. It was just a weird.
Have you ever seen?
And was this your goth phase?
Yes. Throwback from.
Please tell me you had a goth phase. You had a goth phase?
No.
He's always been like this.
I've always been like this. Yeah. I think definitely. Even at that time, I was thinking about how you know within us there's that energy, that power that we at that time I thought of it as like divine power that we can tap into and get to know, and that higher self or that. What in Buddhism we call the Buddha nature, that nature that
can you give a definition?
Tiger blood.
So, Buddha nature or our potential to be the light in the world. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the graphic novel Black Hole?
No. I might have seen it, but I can't think exactly.
Okay. Because there's a thing where after they have sex, they have mutations.
Oh yeah.
So you might find that interesting.
Oh, I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah,
Thank you. Yeah.
I read it.
Where? Wait.
Black Hole? It's a graphic novel.
Wait, by who? Yeah. By who?
I have to look it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
GTS.
I'm not like a good nerd.
I was about to ask, you know, and I think I may have alluded to this before the break, but, you know, in regards to first open mics, more importantly, how often did you share your work with people?
Ooh, yeah.
I think, you know, I would always be kind of usually on a kind of, I don't do it that often. I share. I do now, but for a long time I would kind of like just show it among friends or this kind of thing, and I wasn't too into going to publicly speak about it. Yeah.
Okay, so set the stage for the high school VJ.
Yeah,
you're going to share this poem with anybody. Is it going to be a family member or like a close friend?
I think close friend, because I think my family. Although I gave my mom my collection of poems ultimately when I published Escape from Samsara.
Yeah.
And, you know, she kind of liked it, but even my sister didn't really quite grasp, like, what I was going for with it.
Right.
So I think that it's a little very different aesthetic from what they're kind of used to, what they're kind of, I don't know. I just think, I feel like my friends, like my brothers and my friends, brothers from other mothers, you know, my friends who are my good crew, understand kind of, because I've grown up with them, and they understand what I'm kind of going for a little bit better.
And ultimately, your parents were supportive of this. But would you say that they had encouraged you maybe to go a different route outside of the writing realm, and they thought maybe this was just something that was a hobby?
I think my mom, I remember she had really encouraged the arts in me. She had brought me to a audition for a local community theater where she was like, and I was like opposed to going actually at that time. This is
you were opposed
I was
to
like,
the acting.
This is the first time that I was going to do it.
Can I ask?
She
was
told
that,
me to go.
Was that essentially like, no, I can't do that, or was that genuinely you were like, that just does not seem fun to me at all. It just does not appeal to me.
Well, exactly. I think I was a kid.
Sabotage.
No, I was a kid. I was like, I don't know, I'm not going to get it, or whatever it was, or self doubt, or I didn't really feel like it took a lot of energy to go there and audition. I feel like that seemed like maybe
so it was more,
apathy.
So
or
it was more the latter.
More the apathy, and also my you know, I was like, I'd rather hang out with my friends. I'd rather not. Go out and venture out into the unknown.
Yeah.
And then she was like, no, you have to do this. I'm going to bring you to the audition. And I went to the audition and I loved it. It was just those stories. And I played the elephant in that story. And it was really great in that play. And it was a really great experience. And I became hooked on the arts since then. And I auditioned for Carnegie Mellon.
So good on your mom for pushing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So many of my growth opportunities have come from my parents encouraging me. And
so what you're saying is somebody with a supportive family is more likely to succeed because they've been nurtured?
Exactly.
Wow. Never heard that before.
Who knew?
Yeah, no,
who
exactly. Knew? In my experience, I'm very privileged to have had that. And I acknowledge and appreciate that, to have supportive parents,
And you're not stereotypical what I would think of somebody who grew up in Staten Island.
Yeah, exactly.
Fencing. Yeah. Classic novel.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate, and my parents and my sister have been very supportive of me. That's the reason why I'm so stable and able to lead a successful life. Yeah. Nice.
So how did this film come about then?
So So in the interim between transferring, I went to College of Staten Island to take a video class, and I was interested in doing video production. And I took a video production class, and then they gave me a camera to do a final project, class project. So I decided I'd narrate a poem over it, and then do a montage of different scenes in New York City. So we took the camera, me and a few friends took the camera, took the ferry in to Manhattan, and then I just started shooting seemingly random scenes and things that interested me. I really followed my intuition you know, just anything that seemed interesting to me, I would zoom into it or go into it, like clocks and various things. And I had a friend of mine act as the main person where he's going into nature. It's kind of like we had around Central Park, around there, Columbus Circle. So he's like, he basically undoes his tie, and he's kind of going into nature, and he leads himself into this place in Lyman. That's the narrative thread. In the,
right. The you're narrating
yeah.
this.
Yeah, yeah.
And your friend is acting in it.
Acting in it, yeah.
You spent how long? You spent a whole day in Central Park area?
Yeah, exactly. And then I went back and edited together. So I this is on a VHS tape and all those old.
They were doing, oh my God,
VHS tape. Yeah, it was on a VHS tape and
like reel to reel?
Reel to reel. Yeah, yeah.
Like you so actually had like a machine, or were you just with two VCRs or three VCRs?
No, I think that it was like two VCRs. I don't even remember now.
No, but it had to be.
It had to have been
a two deck. It had to have been a two deck.
It has a digital element to it.
Yeah. Catherine was just asking though, where did you, was it on the premises?
Yeah, on the premises. Yeah, on College Staten Island. Yeah.
Beautiful.
In their studio.
Please tell me you were into romance. Romanticism at the time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So in a way, was this you walking around nature being like, romanticism?
Well, we'll find out.
We'll find out.
True.
We'll find out. Listen to the podcast. Yeah.
Let's
give a listen.
Listen to Enlightenment, narrated by our own guest of honor this week.
...of an urban American in Central Park at high noon. I set my watch an hour fast, but a second slow. I didn't realize it at first. I didn't realize it at first. I never realized these kinds of things. I never realized these kinds of things. I never realized these kinds of things. It is not in my nature. It is not in my nature. It is not in my nature to notice these kinds of things. But one day, I did. I did. I just did, just like that, just like that. It was pointed out to me. It was pointed out to me by a bluebird. It was pointed out to me by a bluebird. It was pointed out to me by a bluebird in Central Park at high noon. It was pointed out to me by a bluebird in Central Park at high noon. On a midday not unlike. On a midday not unlike. But the heat was the only difference. The only difference was the heat. It always has been much, much hotter. The cold is no longer bothering me. It had been the night before. The heat was no longer bothering me. It had been the moment before. The cold was no longer bothering me. It had been the night before. The heat was no longer bothering me. It had been the moment before. Neither the cold nor the heat was bothering me anymore. I inhaled deeply the smoke of my parched cigarette. I inhaled deeply the smoke of my parched cigarette as the smoke slowly filled up my lungs. I inhaled deeply as the smoke of my parched cigarette filled up my lungs slowly. I knew that time was passing me by. Time was passing me by. I knew that time. I learned to accept that. Somehow, I learned to accept that time. It was passing me by. In weather like this, in a day like today, all of this happening as I sat watching. Now the tangerine-colored sunset on a dampened field of green. Another tangerine-colored sunset on a dampened field of green in the middle of August. In the middle of August. In the middle of August, all of this happening as I sat down naked, watching the tangerine-colored sunset on a dampened field of green in Central Park in the midst of the month of August, 1997, Anno Domini, the year of our Lord.
So can I ask, what does the repetition mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I used experimental a lot of repetition to kind of get a musical quality or rhythmic quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to work with that even in plays and such. Some of the plays I would use repetition in order to kind of dissociate from the meaning, which is probably what I was going through with that experience psychologically, but also kind of give a sense to the audience, a sense of like focusing on the rhythm and focusing on the musicality rather than content. Also give different meanings, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, when you keep that going, that structure of your voice is really the structure, you know, that's the structure of the whole film, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So that was just very interesting, and especially, you know, how old were you when you made that?
So
it was 97, right?
97, yeah. 97, 98, around that time.
Yeah. Because that year was mentioned in the verse.
Yeah, exactly.
But the video that we're watching here in the studio.
It says
90. Honestly, that's a common thing that happens with video cameras. They get their year wrong all the time.
Exactly. I didn't know how to change it. I wasn't too excited.
Nobody does.
No, I love it. You shipped it over. 13/27, September per 11th.
Yeah.
Do you have, no, just like, it just so fucks up sometimes. But honestly, how old were you?
19 or 20, I think. Okay.
Yeah.
19.
All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
That was born.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very...
You were still living on Staten Island, though.
Well, I just moved from Poughkeepsie back to Staten Island. So,
right.
And then, yeah.
This was the transition between Vassar and Rutgers.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'd already... Not to sound blunt about this, but you had already gone through your crisis, effectively.
A major portion of it. In 2002, I had a little bit of a crisis about, like, because, like, that was just the beginning of it, actually. Because,
okay.
Like, I really got
stage one.
Stage one.
So, yeah, really, this was just the beginning of it. The next film was me running around the city talking to random people, yeah?
Yeah, it was basically like 2002 was difficult.
How did John Lennon get in here?
Oh, sorry. No, I was trying to do that. Do you know the...
I've got four stock characters, and this is one of them.
This is one of them.
I burned the other two on the intro.
I did. I had to get
all
rid
right,
of them.
All right, VJ.
Yeah. Anyway, so 9/11 was like kind of a very disturbing moment. And then the first anniversary of 9/11, I remember I got hospitalized and such. And it was really upsetting. I guess I connect a little bit with the 9/11 truth. You know, I was thinking a lot of paranoid thoughts about things like, you know, whether or not the government was complicit and all this kind of thing. All this kind of stuff was going through my mind.
Sure.
And all these things. And it was just a very disturbing kind of time for, I think, everyone.
What if you're right, though? What if it was the government?
Yeah.
Like, what if that wasn't you being crazy?
Yeah. Definitely there's certain aspects of it. The thoughts I had at that time that were probably true, that, you know, in effect, you know, the government and all that were creating these lies about Iraq and all that and about the mass destruction and all these kinds of things. But we need to be a little bit more, we need to keep self-care and all that and be able to, we need to be warriors of light without kind of inflicting ourselves the damage that, you know, the wounds or whatever, not being too... Taking it too much, taking that burden too heavily, yeah.
Because as every warrior of light knows, you've got to fuck up somebody else's life before you can fix your own.
Oh, God. Yeah.
A lot of these huge political things do affect you in a major way. And you have a lot of thoughts, you have a lot of feelings. You manifest all of that frustration into your writing.
Yeah, I think I've been able to channel and kind of direct the kind of flow of the thoughts and ideas into kind of a way in which I can experiment and allow myself to, you know, rethink about the things that I've gone through. So in Escape from Samsara was about kind of looking at everyday occurrences that were happening and looking them through a spiritual lens. And Celebrity Salon and I took like the public narrative of these celebrities and kind of melded them into meditative moments where I kind of use them as personas or symbols for my own experience, you know?
Yeah.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, so like Joaquin Phoenix I used as a person who is on the road or on the path to full enlightenment. And in the book, in a series of poems, he decides to go to a cave and like meditate.
Okay.
So he goes to the cave, he's like of the objective. And I was kind of inspired by his flawed documentary, I'm Still Here.
Oh, when he lost his goddamn mind?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that's why I thought
as a piece of performance
kind
of, art.
Yeah, exactly. This is the kind of an actor who would just put everything on line to go out there and go into a cave and try to do this. That's why I cast him in that role, in the narrative. So I was like, picked him and I did that. And then I had him on a collision course with another actor, Sacha Baron Cohen, who was like a provocateur. He goes into the cave and he kind of tries to provoke him using kind of more tantric elements of like mixing the what we consider like the sexuality with spirituality and challenging him. So you have to read the book. I hope people go get, find samples of it and all this kind of thing. That's kind of like what I try to think about is how any narrative is never neat and clean, but rather there's always some avenue for trying to challenge and trying to provoke, and I try to take on that mantle.
You've got a lot of work cut out for you in this time of your life right now.
As we said earlier, you're aiming low.
We're getting high.
They can get your book on Amazon?
Or? Yeah, on Amazon, all these sources. But they can also look at vjrnathan.com, V-I-J-A-Y, rnathan.com. And then they can follow what I'm doing. I'm going to be posting readings and such, all these kinds of things, and find out links to buying Celebrity Sadhana either through BookBaby or through Amazon or wherever they prefer.
Anything else that you have coming up then that you want people to check out? Obviously, besides the amazing show that comes here every week on Radio Free Brooklyn at 8 a.m. on Mondays.
Yeah, every last Thursday of the month at Forest Hills Library.
Yes.
We do an open mic.
That's where the open mic is.
That's
okay.
The open mic. That's the open mic at Forest Hills Library.
Every last Thursday?
Every last Thursday. I'll be reading December 27th, I believe, is the last Thursday of December. I'll be reading that from that book as well.
Oh my God! Can I come to that? And I'm gonna go see an old friend.
Will, you can go to all.
No. Can I come to that? I'm gonna see an old friend before I come in, and then I'm gonna come in. I'm gonna read really fast.
Whatever you read. Well, I didn't even realize you did any readings.
I do like a couple of short form readings of stories of mine, but I do that in the middle of nowhere. I literally tell nobody about that.
Oh, because now you have
me. Oh, fuck. Anyway,
you're on blast.
Yeah. I'm really excited to hear your reading.
Great. Thank you so much.
That open mic format's wonderful for really finding out how it is within a crowd. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Listen to VJR Nathan's show, Trips to Power, every Monday morning here from 8 to 9 a.m. for sure. Listen to our show here next week, 3 to 4 p.m. right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. That'll about do it for us. Thank you so much, VJ, for being
here this week. Thank you so much.
Yeah, VJ, that's a lot of very personal work, and you're very open about sharing it, and you're very eloquent in describing it. So, thank you.
Is there any way, VJ, that as we go out before we end the show, that you can, anybody else is going to see us because it's okay. You can just get embarrassed with the three of us here watching you do the bat dance.
Do the bat dance. I'll play the music.
She's going to get the music.
I used to do the hammer dance, actually. That was what I used to do.
The hammer dance. Yeah. Do the...
Yes, perfect. We'll see you all next week. We're going to play this out.
And we're going to watch VJ dance. Wish y'all were here to see it.
Catherine Dunn.
Thank you.
Will Pasty.
Hey.
Radio I'm a lawn Free dancer.
Radio Free Brooklyn.
We'll see you all. Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn.
And that's a lot of jokers.
That's where Eminem got the idea.
I did have that image as you were screwing it.
It wasn't just me.
No, it really wasn't. I was sort of just saying that Eli was going to be like, so it's a good God. Hey, this fucking job.
I'm going out with style. This shit's going too well.
And Elon Danziger left the studio after having poured a bottle of seltzer water on the console.